My name's Jeff Crane, class of 74, otherwise known as Zach, and I'm here to talk about surfing at Kate in the 1970s. As surfers at Kate, the 1970s were our golden years. Each winter morning, we'd stand at the edge of the mesa before breakfast and look west towards the Carpinteria Reef. If the waves were up, we'd roll the dice as freshmen and try to get on the Wednesday or Saturday afternoon surf trips. A crusty old maintenance worker named Cass would drive a rickety open-air hay truck down to Rincon for a couple of precious hours in the winter waves. 10 to 12 names were drawn from a lottery, but unfortunately for us, seniority ruled. A second option was to score winter surfing or spring surfing as one sport for PE. That meant the other 4 days of the week, Cass, later Alan Gunther and Frank Light, drove a group of excited surfers to the beach. As soon as classes ended, we pull on our wetsuits in the dorms, race to the truck with our boards and towels, stack all the boards against one side, oldest, most beat up boards always went on the bottom, and bounce down Casitas Pass and Highway 101 with our fingers crossed. Pumping waves or flat, it was our time in the water, our departure from the rigors of school. We'd paddle out into the lineup together, laughing, trading surf stories, and washing away the academic load from the day. Hooting at each other during a good ride, paddling like crazy to get over a set, or snickering and waving goodbye at a friend who got caught inside. It was all a blast and a gift. We study and learn new moves from the locals as they tore up Rincon's classic right-breaking wave. We never knew their real names, so we gave them nicknames. The Moke, Niffer, and Blue Boy were a few. They would nod their occasional acknowledgement at this odd group of happy schoolboys. Later, as we saw Cass signaling from the beach, we'd slowly look for that last wave and then head to shore. Bundled up and huddled together, we silently froze on the drive back to school, praying there would still be hot water in the dorms. But without a doubt, for all 4 years, our favorite surf day was Sunday. No surf truck, no upperclassmen pulling rank, no waiting. Just get to the beach under one's own power. In 1970s, few 14, 15-year-olds had any mode of transportation, except for a barn full of ancient 10-speeds at the bottom of the mesa. So we walked the 3 miles from the top of the mesa through the adjoining avocado orchards to the southeast, across an undeveloped wasteland of dirt fields, and finally under Highway 101 to the tip of Rincon Point. Greg Smith and I were joined by Rick Caspers, Chris Nadei, Jeff Goddard, and a few others on occasion. We would all make that early morning push. Once we secured our Sunday morning early permission, some of us would retreat to the library on Saturday night to get all of our homework finished. Then the backpacks were loaded with wetsuits and whatever food we could scrounge together, and our clock radios were set for 3 or 4 in the morning. The mesa was beautifully quiet on those early Sunday mornings. The Saturday night late permission students had all stumbled off to bed after crawling up the sides of the mesa through a haze of blue smoke. Dorm masters were asleep. Faculty houses were dark. It was time for our escape from Alcatraz. This was the one day a week we could be totally free of the boarding school blues. We'd giggle with delight as we slipped and slid down the dark trails on the side of the mesa, then picked our way nervously through the avocado orchards. Here we were greeted by the drone of huge airplane propellers churning away on towers above the trees to prevent a hard freeze. Smudge pots dotted the rows under which we'd briefly gather to warm up before scampering up the hill past the creepy farmhouse. Once, a huge German shepherd leapt out at us from the dark groves. We screamed, but barked right back at it as the lights flicked on in the farmhouse. We ran past wondering if we would still be able to surf with our backsides full of buckshot. We continued walking through the dirt abyss to the edge of the highway. That's when we would pause and listen. If the waves were really big, we could hear the low rumble of swells hitting indicator at the tip of Rincon Point. That would give us the shot of adrenaline we needed to finish our trek and jog under the overpass and scurry down to the beach. After dumping our gear, we pulled on our wetsuits and quickly paddled out into the bone-chilling water just as the sky was beginning to lighten in the southeast above La Conchita. Dark pre-dawn walls would wrap around from Indicator and then line up perfectly further down the point in the cove, our favorite section of Rincon. For 45 minutes or so, we owned the whole point. We'd jump on any wave we could, yelling and cheering for each other as we enjoyed a few perfect waves to ourselves. It was a magical time of pure schoolboy fun as the waves washed away our prep school angst. However, as the sun's rays grew in strength, so did Rincon's infamously aggressive crowds, and soon we were joined by the massives. 1970 was well into the shortboard era, which bode well for us in our 6-mile round-trip hike, and it was also pre-surf leash. When one lost his board trying to paddle through a cleanup set or after a wipeout, he had to negotiate a long swim as well as pick his way over Rincon's massive rock reef to retrieve his stick. This helped manage the crowds, but still, by 9 or 10 in the morning, it was packed. The Sunday crowds did allow us to sit outside the break and enjoy the superstars who showed up. Jay Riddle, Mike Purpose, Brad McCall, even Jeff Hackman from Hawaii would dazzle the spectators with their seasoned bottom turns and well-timed cutbacks. The local kneeboarder designer guru, George Greeno, would not only pull off incredible moves on his board, he would sweep flawlessly across an Indicator face on an air mattress. We would watch in awe. Hours of exhausting fun later, we'd stumble back to our makeshift camp on the beach, tired and spent, but very satisfied. We'd regroup, nibble a little leftover Stork Club junk food, and try to snatch a booty full of fresh water from an unsuspecting homeowner's garden hose. Out we'd paddle again for a second session, this time into the thick of a Sunday crowd. Rides were fewer, but the spectating was incredible. As the afternoon wore on, we'd estimate how long it would take us to lug our surf-weary selves back up to the mesa, and we'd call it a day. The 3-mile return trip felt like 6, but we didn't care, as we continued to joke, share surf tales, and of course, make up stories. We would tease each other about school, our home surf breaks, or lack of girlfriends, as well as torture one another with favorite food descriptions. It was a time of bonding and building friendships, which would carry us through 4 years at Kate and scores of surfing adventures. These lifetime relationships were forged in the huge effort of a long hike and a day of surfing one of California's premier breaks. Completely famished, we'd climb those impossibly steep trails back to our dorms, dump our gear, and race to the Stork Club for those delicious, calorie-laden frozen novelties. But if the surf had been exceptional, we'd cut our return close and make it back just in time for a quick shower before the painful ritual of Sunday dinner. Once seated in the dining commons, the race was on to see who could eat his first serving the fastest or gulp down the most milk, and then offer to go to the kitchen for seconds for the table. And seconds they were, leftovers from the previous week and powdered milk. But we ate it all, gleaming with our sunburnt faces. Then Headmaster Fred Clark would take one look at us and announce, "You boys look far too healthy. Why, people back east this time of year look as though they just crawled out from under a rock." The last bit of torture was trying to stay awake during the lengthy Sunday night chapel service. We'd nod off through the religious speaker or the musician, replaying each glorious wave ridden that day in our heads. Occasionally, we'd receive a stern poke in the back by a teacher, catching us in the middle of our Rincon reverie, and we'd snap to attention. But thankfully, the service would come to a close, and we could slink off to bed to enjoy longer, deeper dreams of Sunday surfing sessions to come.